This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who aspire to be. If you're a real estate, mortgage, or financial professional, this is the place for you. We'll explore innovative investment analysis, sales, marketing, and income-generating strategies for the most historically proven wealth creator, income property. Learn from the experts as they show you how to build a better business and a better life.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialist and those who desire to be. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about increasing your income, your productivity, and just generally having a better life while serving your clients better with America's most historically proven asset class, income property. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds. Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome Gene Guarino. He is president of the Residential Assisted Living Academy. And, you know, for decades, we've been hearing about the graying of America and the demographic changes in America. And assisted living has been a very lucrative field where many people have achieved superb profits by investing in it. And we're going to learn more about it today. So I'm glad to have Gene here. Gene, welcome. How are you doing?
Thanks, Jason. I'm doing great.
Yeah, great to have you. So assisted living, how did you get into it?
Well, I first heard about it over a decade ago. A lot of people probably the same thing and said, this is going to be good. How do I get in? And there was nobody there to teach me. So I dove right in about 3 years ago. My mother needed help, and that's how I really got into it. She needed help in her 80s. And when I researched what the choices are, the options, I realized, wow, there's a huge opportunity to do this on a residential basis. And so that's what I did.
Fantastic. Why assisted living? What's so great about it?
Well, the reality is, just from a number standpoint, the mega trend of the silver tsunami, the baby boomers, there's 77 million baby boomers, and I'm one of them. You may be one of them too, Jason. And the reality is we're living longer.
Glad to say I'm not. I'm a Gen Xer.
Oh, good for you, man. So, well, yeah. Then you're going to be taking care of me. So that's the reality.
Yeah, there you go. They call us the sandwich generation. Yeah.
You know, as people are living longer, and that's the reality, they don't need a nursing home with medical care, and it's not the Golden Girls. They need something in between. And that's where assisted living comes in, where there's 24/7 care. And in our case, we do it in a residential setting, which is much more comfortable for the resident. And a lot of times it's less expensive. And we're still making a boatload of money doing it, but we can help people do good and do well.
Why is it so good, though? You know, dive into like the details of the dynamics of it. What goes on? And maybe before you do that, actually, Gene, for the listeners, if you could define the different sort of levels or classifications of assisted living, because when people hear that, you know, they don't know if you're talking about a big sort of institutional style apartment type complex looking thing, which is really not used as a standard apartment complex, or if you're talking about a house with, you know, 3 to 5 people or 10 people living there, and what are the different licensings and requirements? So yeah, let's dive into all of that. Go start where you like.
You got it. So here it is. A lot of people, when they hear assisted living, they think about, as you said, the big box, the big facility with 100 or 200 people, and that's not what I do. In a situation like that, it's usually one caregiver to 10, 15, I've heard as high as 30 residents. So they don't get great care. They may be on the third floor in apartment 6B. It's 100 yards to breakfast. That's a big facility. So that's not what I do, but that's where the big money is moving into right now. And we'll come back to that. So what I do is I do it on a residential basis. It's a single family home right in the middle of a beautiful neighborhood. It's allowed because of the Fair Housing Act on a federal level. So even with a homeowners association, we can still do it. Having said that, I'm going to do it in an area that the town, the city is saying, yes, you can. Here's how you do it. It is licensed by the state. There are caregivers in the home 24/7 taking care of the residents. I'm the business owner, though. So I own the business. I have a manager. The manager has caregivers. The residents are taken care of 24/7. And a lot of people who are doing this now on a residential basis are doing it in what I call mom and pop. where they live in the house themselves. They've got a few extra bedrooms the kids moved out of. They move a handful of seniors in, and they do some extra laundry and some extra food. And that's not what I do, not what I teach my students. I want you to run it as a business. The homes that I have in Phoenix and Scottsdale, Arizona, and I teach my students around the country, are typically a little bit larger. So they may be 3,000 square feet to 5,000 square feet. They are a lot of times on a single level, although I was out visiting a student's property in New Jersey just yesterday, and he has a four level. He's got three levels and a basement, so he's actually installing an elevator to do it inside that single family home. And that is a fantastic project he's got going. So in the home itself, let's just say you have 10, where you're licensed for 10 by the state to do this. You have two caregivers during the day, one at night. And they may be paying the residents in the home $4,000 to $5,000 a month to stay there. So 10 people times 4,000 is 40,000 gross income to pay the manager, the caregivers, provide food, utilities, and so on. There's going to be a net profit each month left over of $10,000, $15,000. So from a single family home that you might simply rent it out and make $1,000 in positive cash flow, if you're lucky, in a business like this, you can actually make $10,000 or $15,000 a month pretty consistently, because there's a real need for this. There's a waiting list on these homes. People need to live and they need care. So this is a great alternative for them as opposed to the large big box facility.
You know, I'm sure people listening to this, though, are thinking, isn't there a lot of liability? Do I have a bunch of red tape, licenses I have to obtain? I mean, people pass away in these homes. They fall, they break their hip. You know, it seems like it's just a Pandora's box, right? Is that a valid concern?
I'm really glad you asked the question, Jason, because that is one of the big questions that people have. So let's just get real and get right down to the nitty-gritty. If you own the house, you should have that in one entity with its own umbrella liability policy, whether you're renting it to a single family or you're doing a residential assisted living. So one entity owns the real estate with its own policy. Another entity will own the business and have its own very specific liability insurance just for this industry. And by the way, it's not that expensive. It's about $1 per day per resident. So if you have 10 residents, that's $300 a month. If you have 15 residents, it might be $450.
With what kind of deductibles, though? You know, I mean, there's a policy is not just a policy, right? You know, there's a lot of details.
So in those policies, the ones that I have, it's a $1,000 deductible. It's a $1 million, $3 million. So $1 million per incident, $3 million for the policy.
For the year in the aggregate. Okay, got it.
Yeah. Exactly. But again, I don't want people to get too caught up in that, because what happens if somebody's in the single family home that you're leasing and they, you know, stick their finger in the socket? You're liable. So you better have liability insurance for that.
I do want to say, though, like, I have never, ever in all my years and hundreds of tenants of investing had any tenant sue me for something like that, or any, you know, like you hear about the, oh, what if they slip and fall in the crack in the sidewalk or the banana peel? But I just don't ever hear of that actually happening. I think a lot of these lawyers out promoting asset protection and insurance people say that, you know, but I mean, certainly it's happened before. I just have never experienced it myself in many hundreds of tenants, and I've never actually heard of one of our thousands of clients having that problem either. Doesn't mean it can't happen, but it seems like, gosh, you're dealing with very tender elderly people here, and you know, that would concern me instantly, you know.
Well, here's the reality. You just said it. There's very few people that actually have an incident where they even follow through with the suit. They could, but they don't, or they could make something up and do it. In the home that we're talking about, again, it's not medical. So that's the first thing. There's no medical services. It's just a home. That's the first thing. Second, these are elderly people and they are going to fall. So when somebody's ready to move into a home like this, it's just part of our intake, part of our assessment of the client. We let them and their family know there's a good chance you're going to fall as you get older, whether you're at home or whether you're here. And that's why they move there. So somebody then can attend to them if they do fall. So a fall is a fall. Now, let's assume that person falls and goes to the hospital because they broke their hip and they pass away 2 months later. Does that happen? Absolutely, yes. But grandma's 89 years old. This wasn't unforeseen. We knew this was going to happen. It's just a matter of when, not if. And I'm not saying everybody falls and everybody, but you get my point. So now think about the family for a moment. Number one, they knew that mom was passing away. They've been spending $6,000 a month to take care of her for the past 2-3 years. And then she fell, went to the hospital, and passes away. Now they don't have to spend $6,000 a month. They knew she was well taken care of for the last X number of years, and it's not $6,000 that is going away from their inheritance for the rest of their life. So just to be crass and be straightforward, you know what? We all have the same interest. I want mom to stay alive, maybe even more than they do. Right. So you have an insurance policy to protect yourself. You have your asset protection to protect all of your assets. Beyond that, you know, you have to just get rid of any liability you can.
Yeah, that is a tough way to look at it.
But, hey, but well, okay. That's reality.
Yeah, no, I admittedly it is to some extent. Okay. Well, Gene, are you sure you covered the different sort of classifications of homes? I want to make sure we did that.
Yeah. First of all, many people who are listening have probably seen independent living where there's a 55 and above community. That is just adult living. There is no care given or provided at all. So it's just senior restricted, but it's not care. Then maybe you've seen the big box, the Brookdales, the Sunrises, where they come in and put in a $20, $30 million complex, which typically is going to be either an assisted living complex, 100, 200 beds, 400 beds. I was talking to an operator yesterday. Or it's what's called a CCRC, Continuous Care Retirement Community, where they move in where it's adult, you know, it's age restricted, so it's just senior living. Then they need help, so they move on to the assisted living. Then they need medical help and they move on to a nursing home. So they're all within that same complex. And that's what the REITs and the hedge funds are investing in, the billions and billions of dollars. The rates of return they're getting are phenomenal. Where you and I can play in this game very easily is to have a single family home, licensed for 10, right down the street. They did the market research to let you know the seniors are there with the money and they're willing to spend it. And they control 70%+ of the assets in America today, seniors themselves. So they have the money, and private pay is what we focus on, not government pay. So not Medicaid where the state pays $1,000 or $2,000 a month, but private pay where individuals are paying for it out of their own assets or their kids are paying for it for mom and dad.
Okay, so we don't have to deal with insurance companies and government, right? We don't have that red tape?
Well, you don't from a getting paid standpoint. If you want to, you can. I teach my students not to. Just to give you the comparison, if somebody's getting they're collecting money from the state, the feds give money to the state then gives it to people who can't afford to pay for themselves in whatever program they have. So in California, it's called Medi-Cal, right? So they have a policy for elderly and they pay $997 a month to take care of an elderly person in an assisted living home. I can't make a business out of that. That same home could get $5,000 a month private pay. So that's the group that I focus on. Now, if they have what's called long-term care insurance, I'll definitely work with the insurance company on that because they're typically paying $150 to $250 per day, and that's private insurance. Somebody's been paying on it for decades, and now it's time to collect. And so we definitely do want to work with them, but frankly, only 10% of the population has those policies. So most people are literally walking in with a check. Here's the check for mom this month. So it's a pretty simple procedure.
Is there any one state that is better, you know, to do this than another? I mean, you're in Arizona, you're in Phoenix, and obviously that's an attractive retirement area. You mentioned a client in New Jersey, I think. You know, location, 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 right?
Absolutely. So yeah, and you know, everybody thinks seniors move south when they're ready to retire, which is somewhat true but deceiving. So if somebody's in Minnesota and they move to Florida when they're retired, that's great. So they'll eventually get older, and it's not 65 where you need to move into a home, it's 85. You know what I mean? You're older. So if somebody moved from Minnesota to Florida and now they're 85 years old, chances are the family's going to find them the help they need there in Florida. They also might move them back to Minnesota so they're closer to the family. On the other hand, if somebody's in Minnesota and they didn't retire to Florida or Texas or Arizona, they're in Minnesota and they're getting old, so there's needs for homes there. So here's the real numbers. In Florida, there's 3,000 of these residential assisted living homes. In Arizona, there's about 2,000 of these residential assisted homes that are licensed. So there's a lot, but think about the populations. Arizona, about 5-6,000, I'm sorry, million people, 5-6 million people, 2,000 homes. Florida, 20 million people, 3,000 homes. There's a lot of room in both those states. But I was in New Jersey yesterday. There's two other homes. Two. That's it. They're all big monster facilities, only two homes. I'm working with students in New Mexico, very few. Working with So in a lot of other states, there's very few of these. The market is incredibly wide open. Yet even when the students come to my class in Arizona, I say, you can do it right here too. There's plenty of room for all of us. Now, if you're asking me where to stay away from, California is a difficult state to do any kind of business in.
California is a difficult state to do any kind of business. You are exactly. So right about that. It's like, it's every time, you know, because I help real estate investors acquire properties nationwide and build these nationwide portfolios. And we don't recommend California, although I happen to live in La Jolla, California, San Diego area. But Gene, you know, no matter what I do around the country, there are two places that you've always got to have a bunch of special stuff, and that's California and New York. You want to do business in those places, it's like the red tape is insane. It's just unbelievable how intrusive the government is.
You can charge more doing business in those states, but it is a hassle. So if you were to say where to stay out of, California is not easy, Florida, New York, not easy. But the red tape, as you mentioned, when it's see, here's the deal. We were just going through this with my assistant here in the office. We're doing the research for every state around the country, so we know how to do business in every state. The states that are easy are the states that have lots of these homes, because here's the rules. Just follow the rules. Jump through the hoop. You're on the other side. Where it's hard is where they don't have any of these. So it's like, what do we call it? How do we do this? What's it like? So a lot of times it's just, well, just do it. And then the state will say, well, I like what you're doing, or let's change this or add that. So you have such a head start right now where the regulations are not there in so many states. California, they've got their regulations down, but just business in general, difficult. Southeast, less expensive. Northeast, more expensive. So if you were to say, I'm in an airplane, where should I land and start residential assisted living? I would do it in the Northeast, the New England areas, the highest in the nation, Washington, D.C. New Jersey, not far behind. Hawaii and Alaska, sure, they're high, but that's just because they're islands or frozen tundras, and it's more expensive, period. But every place has older people, and every place needs this kind of help.
When I've looked at assisted living facilities before, I felt like, and these were just residential homes, and they were being sold as existing businesses. And I felt that the prices were rather high. Like, if you just looked at the real estate itself, you know, some I looked at that weren't operating yet, but they were, I guess, zoned for it or licensed for it. Or what's the right terminology there, by the way, Gene?
Sure. Licensed as a care home would be the terminology. Yep.
So it could be a vacant home, but it's already licensed. Someone went and got a license before doing anything else, right?
Yeah. But that's virtually worthless. I mean, I know where you're heading, Jason. The reality is there's a lot of...
Yeah, because there are people out there as sellers who are trying to charge kind of a premium, and you said it's worthless, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you've got... It's like saying, I have a liquor store, but there is no customers, no sign, no name, no business, no liquor on the shelves, and I'm going to charge you $1 million for my business. No. You got a location. I still have to go ahead and apply to take over your liquor license. Same thing with the assisted living. Just because they have a license, Jason, you still have to come in and you have to do a change of ownership. So there's still an application. There's still a license. If there's no revenue, there is no income. The other thing that I find interesting, and anybody – I've been doing business for 30 plus years, 17 different businesses. When somebody says my business is worth X and you ask them, just like Shark Tank, how do you come to that valuation? Most of the time, it's just completely unreasonable, especially when you look at their tax returns and they've written off everything they possibly can and they show a loss. And they say, well, I really make $200,000 in profit, but my tax return says I'm a pauper. Well, who are you lying to, me or the IRS? I'm not going to pay for it either way. I mean, the reality is it is worth something, but it's a multiple of that net income. So if somebody is a mom and pop, and let me cut to it there, because if somebody's running it as a mom and pop and they're a caregiver, they're the manager, they're cooking the food, and they say, well, we don't have any labor costs. It's like, whoa, stop. I have to replace everything that you do, so it's going to cost me. So what you call profit really is just expense. So how much is left after I replace you with all those things? Well, you make $10,000 a year in income. All right, it's worth 2-3 times that $10,000. That's the fact. Now, there's different ways of looking at valuation. Unfortunately, and I know the realtors won't like this, but a lot of times I get people who are giving values to business that are just incredibly out of whack. And when you ask them any kind of reasoning, how did you get there? I had one just the other day, $2.5 million. How'd you come up with that? Well, the business generates $500,000 a year in revenue. So five times that is 2.5.
Is five times the sort of the number, or is it three times, or what is it?
Oh, it's not five times. It's closer to two or three times. But here's the problem. They took the gross income. If they took the net income and did it two or three times that, that's a reasonable number. But five times the gross sales? No, it's never going to work. Five times? You'd have to be close to a technology company, not a service-oriented business. So realistically, when you're netting $100,000, it might be worth $250,000. That's a reasonable number. So here's the great thing. You get the home, renovate it, get it licensed. You now created $250,000 worth of value once you fill that business and it's up and running.
So, Gene, that's actually my question for you. Is it better to buy an existing home, or is it better to just buy a regular house, I'm going to say, not call it a home, and make it an assisted living home? Which is better?
Well, it's a matter of speed. So if you buy the existing business, you're paying for your speed. You're paying the extra $200,000, $300,000 because you're cash flowing day one. If you buy the house, renovate it, get it licensed, and get it started, it could take you a year to get to full occupancy with the business open. So for that year, you're not making money, you're losing money, right? Negative cash flow and carrying costs and so on. So it just depends. I get students coming into the class saying, look, I don't want to wait a year. I just want to make money day one. Well, great. Here's a business for sale.
It takes a year to get it ready?
Well, not that it takes a year, but I always want to be conservative and be realistic. If you take a house and let's just say you're going to convert a two-car garage and add three bathrooms and do some renovation work, how long is that going to take? It depends, right? Do you have architect drawings? Do you have a town that is helping you or hurting you, right? Do you have contractors ready to go? So that project could take 2 weeks or it could take 10 months, depending on your contractors, right? So now let's say you get through the renovation stage and it's going to need something. Let's be real. It's not going to be just let's put a coat of paint on, grab bars, smooth floors, wide doors. You're going to want to do something to make it friendly for the seniors. So it's going to take some renovation time to get the license. If you do it the way the state of California, for instance, says to do it, it'll take you a year to get a license. If you do it the way I teach you to do it, a month, 2 months, that's reasonable. But I'm going to tell you it's going to take you 3 or 4 months to get a license so that we can be realistic. Then once you're open, it's not like the field of dreams. If I build it, they will come. Did you do marketing to get this new business open? And how do people know that you're there? You're in the middle of a neighborhood, so you can't put a sign in the front lawn. So did you do marketing before? Do you have open houses? If you do it right, it's going to take you 6 months to a year, and that's exactly what I tell people. If you do it wrong, people won't even get started because they'll say, oh, it's too hard. But you're not going to turn a house that would have made you $500 a month positive cash flow into making you $15,000 a month without some effort. So I want to make sure everybody understands who's listening. It takes some effort, but is it worth it? Oh, one deal and you could be done.
Right. Yeah. Very interesting. Okay. So what is the ultimate plan in this, or the exit plan, if you will? Is the exit plan not to have an exit plan and to just keep these properties for cash flow? Or is it better to improve their operation or create them out of thin air, as you mentioned, and then sell them? What's the best plan?
That's a neat question. You know, I always teach my students, you've got three things you can get out of real estate: cash now, cash flow, cash later. So if you just want to do cash now, fix and flip, you can do it in this business. There are buyers who want to buy that business. You get the house, renovate it, get it licensed, get it full. There's buyers who are willing to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for that on top of the real estate value. So that's cash now. You can fix and flip. Cash flow. I'm 54, 17 businesses, 30 plus years in real estate. I'm done with fix and flip. You know, the day you sell it, you're unemployed. I've got to go find another good deal.
And the IRS takes a big cut of that on the fix and flip. That's why I'm a buy and hold guy. It's just, you know what I found, Gene, is that the fix and flippers, they have spending money. And the people who buy and hold have their real wealth. You know, it just, I mean, hey, spending money is great. I'll take it. But the wealth comes from the buy and hold, it seems like.
Well, and, you know, you mentioned spending money, and I think everybody who's listening can relate to that. The idea of big chunk of change, I made 50 grand, it's in the bank. Let's say that's after taxes, to take that out of the equation. The problem is we live on a cash flow basis. So each one of us needs something, whether it's five grand, 10 grand, 25 grand per month to live on comfortably. So what you really want to do is develop whatever it is you're doing so you create that cash flow that you need to live happily ever after. Having a big chunk of change in the bank is fun, but if it doesn't get replenished, you're on a losing streak. You're delaying the next job. So that's why I got into this financially, was to create these assets that generate cash flow on a consistent basis with a market that is growing exponentially. I mean, we haven't even talked about the demographics of 77 million baby boomers, 10,000 people a day turning 65, 4,000 people a day turning 85. The longevity, people's lasting longer, people needing this help, less kids being born. So that means less kids to take care of mom and dad financially. If nothing else, do one of these homes to make 10, 15 grand a month in profit and have a place to move into. So you're not sticking $1 million bill with your kids. You know, if nothing else, at least prepare for the future there. I don't know what some people are thinking, that, you know, the government's going to take care of them. Go see what $1,000 a month will buy you in California. You're living on the wrong side of the tracks in a neighborhood you wouldn't even slow down in, let alone drop mom off in and come visit her every week.
Well, Gene, this is fascinating. Give out your website. Tell people where they can find out more.
Sure. The website is ralacademy.com. So that's residential assisted living, ralacademy.com. If you go there, a couple of things. There's a free report we can give you. Let us know that Jason is the one who sent you, so that way we can make sure to thank Jason for that too. But there's a free report there, an article I've written for U.S. World News, and we'll send that to you, but ralacademy.com.
And Gene, is there a question that I didn't ask you, or anything you want to mention just in your closing thoughts here? Maybe something I didn't ask that I should have asked.
Sure. I would love to be able to explain a whole lot more, but the reality is that making money is fun and it's fine, but at some point in life, everybody who's listening to me, you'll get this. It's more than that. It's more than just making money. So one of the things I really focus on and teach my students is do good and do well. The ability to make a lot of money, but also help a lot of people. It's a really neat feeling to walk into one of these homes and know that you're servicing these 10 seniors, but also their families, and you're affecting in a truly positive way, potentially dozens, if not hundreds and hundreds of people in the life of this business. So do good and do well. Do it for more than just the money, but the money's fantastic. And the opportunity, everybody who's listening to my voice, if you don't get in on this now, at the beginning of this wave, this tsunami, you've not only missed it, but you will be kicking yourself. And then you'll end up moving into my home or Jason's home or somebody else's and paying us each month, which is okay because I do need residence and that's fine. But I'd rather encourage you to do this.
Gene, actually, that brings up one last question I have for you just quickly as we wrap up. And I expressed this to you before when we talked offline. But, you know, is this overbuilt? I mean, granted, yes, you're absolutely right that there's a flood of older Americans coming. Someone turns 60 like every 5 seconds or some ridiculous statistic like that. I'm not sure if that's accurate, but it's close. And, you know, but for decades, people have been talking about this and building for it. How is the supply-demand ratio, just really quickly?
Sure, you got it. 36,000 few view. When you go up 36,000 feet above the earth and you look at what's happening in our population right here, every major financial and economic move over the last 40 years has been based on the baby boomers moving through our system. Right now, the front end of the baby boomers are about 69 years old. They're not even in these assisted living homes yet. So this tsunami that's coming is 15 years away, and yet the business is huge right now. That's why the REITs are literally putting in tens of billions of dollars. They're not fix and flippers, guys. They're in it for the next 10, 20 years. And if you want an exit plan, put together 10 of these and sell it off to the big guys, because they don't want to write a small check. They want to write a big check. But cash flow.
Very interesting. Good stuff. Well, Gene, hey, thank you so much. Appreciate you sharing this with us and look forward to learning more. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jason.
You know, sometimes I think of Jason Hartman as a walking encyclopedia on the subject of creating wealth.
Well, you're probably not far off from the truth, Penny, because Jason actually has a 3-book set on creating wealth that comes with 60 digital download audios.
Yes, Jason has that unique ability to make you understand investing the way it should be. It's a world where anything less than 26% annual return is disappointing.
I love how he actually shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I also like how he teaches you to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And the entire set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered at a savings of $94.
That's right. And to get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series, complete with over 60 hours of audio and 3 books, just go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month, just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.